This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last episode, we left Ruby and Edie in their less than comfortable lodgings. Ruby was wary of the intentions of the kindly but war-damaged brush salesman, Mr. Woods. She also began to realise that preparing Edie for a new start will be far from easy.
At the end of the meal, Mr. Woods leaned back in his chair and produced a silver cigarette case from a pocket of his three-piece suit. He opened it and held it out to Ruby. A cigarette was tempting, but she wanted no favours.
"You don't mind, do you?"
He tapped the end of his cigarette on the case and fished in another pocket for his lighter. She watched his long hands as he lit up, wishing she'd accepted his offer.
"I'm afraid there's no guarantee of pudding, Miss Barton," he said to Edie.
"Shall I see?" Edie grinned, ready to leap out of her chair. "You sit back down at once."
Ruby put a hand on Edie's shoulder.
"I know how she feels," he laughed. "Let her go."
Ruby caught him gazing at her.
"Do you always stare at people like that?" she said.
"I'm sorry," he said. "Do you realise your eyes are a sort of silvery gunmetal grey? Like a Royal Navy battleship?"
"Gosh, you're a brash flatterer, aren't you?" she said with a snort. "What girl wants to be told she's got eyes like a battleship?"
He blew smoke as he laughed.
"That was awful, wasn't it? I'm sorry. I'm not used to making personal remarks to young ladies."
"I don't much like chaps who are too fresh. Besides, I was taught that it was rude to make personal comments altogether."
"I am sorry."
His neck reddened.
I shouldn't have. Normally I don't. It was just so striking. Actually, I think they're more the colour of the sky over the Ruahines, just before it rains."
Comparing her eyes to bad weather? What was he trying on? "Give up," she said. "You're making it worse. You're no good at flirting, are you?"
"I don't suppose so. I mean, I didn't.
He stammered, his blush deepening.
"Good. What are the Ruahines?"
"A mountain range on the horizon. Over there."
He gestured with his arm. She closed her eyes, thinking of the dark Waitakere's that crouched behind Auckland.
"In winter, when the hills are topped with snow, it's just like a chocolate box picture," he said.
"Snow?" Ruby didn't know anything about snow outside of novels and Christmas cards. Thinking about how ill-prepared they were for the cold, she shivered. It had been a pleasant evening after all. Ruby pulled the thin curtain across the smudgy window and kicked off her shoes. She was grateful for the sticking plaster on her heel. Pim had put Rawley's salve on the gauze and cut her an extra piece of plaster for the next day.
"Let me comb your hair," she said.
"Come here."
I hate the comb, Edie grumbled. I know. Ruby lifted a hank of Edie's blonde hair, easing the comb through the snarls. I wish I'd seen the state of it before we went to dinner. What will people be thinking of us? Ouch, you're pulling, Edie squealed. It's all knotty. Why didn't you comb it yourself? The truth was, Ruby had always treasured the bedtime ritual of brushing her daughter's hair. Now the comb was all she had.
Well, it's too late now, said Edie, wincing again. It's bedtime.
You're getting too damn cheeky for your own good, young lady. Just stand still. You know these knots will be worse in the morning. I should cut it.
No, I want a ponytail.
Keep still then.
Why didn't you bring the brush?
We were in a hurry to get to the station. We could buy one from Mr. Woods, couldn't we? Could we just?
When we first came in, I saw one of his suitcases had Bon Brush painted on it.
Didn't notice. Ruby had not wanted to see the look most men gave when they were sizing up a woman. He'd probably noticed her ruined stocking.
I could have asked him tonight, Edie said. But I remembered seen and not heard. I behaved myself, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Just as well, too.
A Bon Brush man came around to you know where once, said Edie,
with a conspiratorial air.
And Auntie Mo,
she looked up anxiously.
I mean, Auntie you know who.
There was no use continuing to chide Edie for mentioning Mo Hanrahan. The woman had played the role of a substitute grandmother for almost half of Edie's life. Edie's blithe innocence made Mo's betrayal even more bitter. But her own stupidity, not seeing the truth of it, was more bitter still. Thinking now of Mo grooming Edie's silken hair was sickening. Mo telling the girl how beautiful she'd be one day, how young men would be roaming around her like bees around honey.
Say you'll buy a brush, Mum,
Edie's voice chirruped on.
We'll see.
How long are we going to stay here?
I don't know, said Ruby. A few nights, then we'll see.
What are we going to do?
Edie persisted. We'll see, won't we? Ruby's voice was dry with fatigue.
We'll see, we'll see.
Edie's shoulders stiffened, her fists clenched at her sides.
You've been saying that ever since we left. You know what? I'm bloody well sick of we'll see.
Ruby lifted her head toward the ceiling, giving an eruptive sigh. Tired as she was, a flash of irritation threatened to revive her.
Watch yourself, my girl, or are you begging for a slap?
Edie shrank onto the middle of the bed with her arms folded about her knees. Ruby didn't have the energy to comfort her, even if she'd wanted to. Why should she? Why put up with that sort of cheek? She leaned against the door, arms folded, wishing she had a cigarette. It had been a difficult week, with the strain of carrying on working and behaving in as normal a fashion as she could. False laughter, empty pleasantries, chores that had to be done regardless. A little banter with the others, doing her best to keep things on an even keel for Edie's sake. Planning how they could get away before anyone noticed was all she could think about. If only Angel had come with them.
But, Mum, you said...
Edie's plaintive voice broke into Ruby's thoughts.
On the train, you said we were going to have an adventure. You said it'd be nice.
Ruby went to her and unlocked the thin arms, pulling her close.
This is just the start, chicken, she said. Look, we're here, and we're going to make the best of it.
First thing I have to do is find a job.
Why? I thought...
Edie began. Ruby ran a hand over her aching head.
Listen to me, Edie. We have to have money before we can do anything.
Do you know what might happen if I can't find a job? if I don't find us a decent place to live? You might get taken away. They'll put you in an orphanage.
But I'm not an orphan.
No, but that's the sort of thing that can happen when mothers don't have enough money and they don't know what to do. Just as well, I'm going to make a plan. Anyhow, after the holidays, you'll start at a new school.
But, Mum...
That's all I'm going to say for now. Get ready for bed. Everything will be all right. It was a flimsy reassurance, based on a bare lie. She had no idea how to make anything all right. Half-formed plans fluttered away like torn-up cellophane. The only reason they were in this town was because she had once overheard a couple of gentlemen gossiping about Palmerston North in Moe's guest house parlour. They'd said how, down the main trunk line, the town was the most go-ahead place in the country. That meant shops, offices, factories, jobs, a place she could get respectable employment. She and Edie could start again.
It's freezing!
Edie knelt on the bed in her underwear, rubbing her goosebumpy arms, her discarded clothes thrown on the floor.
This bed is horrible! I hate it! And you didn't bring my pyjamas, did you?
Why do you want to be such a brat? Ruby said. Get into bed. You'll be warm once you get under the blanket.
You're going to roll into the middle and squash me.
Probably.
I didn't want to come here.
Oh, you're making me wild now, said Ruby. Stop moaning and go to sleep, or else.
You're just mean.
Probably. With a bleat, Edie lumped herself into the hollow of the mattress and hauled the blankets over her head. She turned away, curled up, and clutched the only pillow. Fending off a good night kiss, she kicked her way to the furthest edge. Soon, she was asleep. It had been a long day. At last, Ruby had a chance to take stock, starting with counting what money they had. After paying for the train, a breakfast sandwich for Edie, the pie and a cup of tea, and now this room for 3 nights and the extra for their meals, there wasn't much left. Along with the tips she'd kept hidden away for Edie's needs and the change in her small coin purse, she had a knotted sock full of half crowns. Angel's own savings, which she'd given Ruby at the last minute. Added up, all she had left was £10, 17 shillings and 8 pence. That wasn't going to last long, and Edie was right. They needed a hairbrush between them. Next, she shook out the rest of the contents of her purse onto the bedspread. A scarlet flame lipstick, the square faux gold compact, a white handkerchief in need of washing, 4 tiny brass safety pins, 3 hairpins, a small steel nail file, 1 halfpenny, a pencil stub and a small lined notebook of addresses she wouldn't need anymore. The few unused pages could be used for lists. As she put these meagre belongings back in her purse, 1 teardrop-shaped diamante earring remained on the bed. She emptied the bag again and gave it another shake. Nothing more than a thruppenny bit fell out.
Oh, buggeration!
If she could weep, it wouldn't be for the loss of 1 cheap paste earring. There were plenty of other things to cry over. If only all her pain would pump itself out in floods of tears and drip off her chin. But no matter what happened or what was done to her, Ruby's eyes remained dry. Seeing Edie asleep in a bed that was hardly better than a hammock, which they had to share, the events of the last few days sat in her stomach like a block of ice. Rat's Nest would probably be settling down to a normal midweek routine. At this hour, Mo would be in from what she referred to as the guest house next door. Everyone, including the local bobbies, knew it was a brothel. That wide old toad, Mo, would be sitting ticking names and entering numbers in her book, using an abacus to calculate her income. The girls would already be at work next door, or down at the waterfront, except for daft little Faye, who'd be cleaning up before the others got back to Rat's Nest at first light. Who'd be there to work the dance halls and do the best special calls now Ruby had gone. There'd have been ructions when Edie hadn't shown up after school. It would be worse when Mo found out they'd gone. She'd be biting her fat knuckles in fury over the loss. Ruby lay staring at the ceiling, yellowed in the glim light of the fly-spotted bulb. The paintwork in the corners of the room was cracked. She pulled the light cord, welcoming the darkness. Perhaps morning would bring some idea of a plan. Other than getting out of Arcadia, she couldn't think past their immediate needs, which included spending money on underwear. That Mrs. Thompson, who must be the manager of the place, had taken money for 3 nights. Ruby's stomach burned, whether from dyspepsia after the horrible stew, or worry, hardly mattered. The thought of dragging Edie through the streets looking for another place to stay was more than she could bear. There was no use considering finding a better place, a more respectable, quieter place to board. How could she have been so stupid, thinking she could simply start a new life just like that? If she went traipsing around looking for a job with Edie in tow and no wedding ring, people would see her at once for what she was. A wretch. Ruined. A woman who'd let herself fall. She wouldn't stand a chance, and that wouldn't do Edie any good either. Telling lies was tiresome. Her previous work had involved play-acting, rather than straight-out lying. No. Better if she could see whether there was someone willing to look after the girl while she played the role of a poor spinster. Temporary work was what she needed. Sweeping factory floors would do. Anything to tide her over. The newspaper must still be downstairs. While Edie had breakfast, she'd see if there were any advertisements offering work. There was bound to be a morning paper. She'd try to get a look at the classified column when someone had finished with it. Ruby clung to the edge of the mattress. The current of sleep had not quite drifted her away when Edie gave a nickering snore and flung her arm out, hitting Ruby in the nose. A rattling cough passed the door of their room. In the moments before Ruby's eyes opened in the darkness, she could have been snapped back to Rat's Nest, except for Edie's bony body pressed against hers. Doors opened and closed and the stairs creaked. Arcadia House was waking up. Ruby's back ached. The woman who had said the place was cheap hadn't realized what it was like. It was too late now. Sometimes you get what you ask for. As she swung her legs over the side of the bed, an icy drift clawed at her ankles. She longed for a cigarette. A packet of Capstan would go on the list. Edie was still sleeping, her face in profile on the white pillow, her hair tangled like silk thread. Ruby stroked her daughter's cheek with the back of her knuckle. It was hard to reconcile this delicate being with the same cheeky, foul-mouthed creature she'd become. Ruby would have her work cut out, turning her into a young lady. Ruby winced. It had been selfish, a mistake, to have taken Edie away from her sister's place. If it hadn't been for her older sister, Hilda, baby Edie would have been snatched out of the maternity ward, still a tiny, red scrap of a thing, to be bundled away for adoption. There'd been a girl who'd turned up at Rat's Nest, Topsy, who wept and moped all day, mourning for the baby that had been taken. That could have been Ruby's own story, if it hadn't been for Hilda. For the first time, thoughts of Hilda were a thorn in her conscience. Her sister must have grieved for Edie too when Ruby had taken off with her. Might be grieving still. "I'm sorry, Hills," she said, without uttering the words aloud. "I am sorry." If they'd stayed, there'd have been lessons in etiquette and deportment for Edie. She'd be well-spoken by now, mixing with nicely brought-up friends with all the advantages of a decent school. Instead, she'd picked up the manners of the riffraff who ran amok in the streets of the slums. Ruby ground her teeth bitterly. Telling Hilda what her husband was up to had ruined everything. She could have carried on working, cushion-making and lampshade trimming, and put up with Barry hounding her whenever Hilda's back was turned, waiting for her to give in. What a ninny she'd been, tittle-tattling. A fat lot of good that had done her when it came down to it. The irony. As soon as she got to Rat's Nest, she'd been forced to learn to give in. That's how it had begun. And now, she'd dragged Edie all the way to Palmerston North to land in another dump. A board creaked in the corridor. Ruby sprang up to make doubly sure she'd locked the door. She listened for footfalls fading as the person passed. Someone going to the bathroom. Whoever it was would pass back again. Her heart leapt about like a rabbit in a sack. Edie didn't stir. Footsteps, comings and goings, meant nothing to her, nothing more than the usual creaks and groans of sighing timbers in an old, borer-ridden house. Ruby climbed back into the bed for warmth, gently moving Edie's limbs out of the way. She had been Edie's age when the creak of a floorboard in the dark had meant her father was coming in. First, he leaned over the other bed where her older sister, Hilda, curled under her blankets. Ruby listened to him whisper, "Night, night, Hilda, love." And she'd tried not to breathe as he came over to her. Each night, she hoped he'd miss her out. With her body straight, legs clamped together, she'd imagine herself dead in a sarcophagus, wishing she could be dead as his hand slid under the sheet. In the bed across the room, the whites of Hilda's eyes shone in the dark, watching him at Ruby's bedside. His moans were buried in the bed cover. At last, he'd stand abruptly and leave the room, and a draught would seep under the bedding, making her shiver. Arcadia House stilled. Ruby shivered.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.